Now the second of our two exclusive KGEZ Good Morning Show drill downs, a service of Dent Magic, the Valley's leader in less invasive car repair. Out to Washington, D.C., and Bob Costantini. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, John. President Biden, within the hour or so, will be speaking about what the Senate did and finalized last night and sent to his desk that he was expected to sign today. The National Security Supplemental Bill that includes the funding for Ukraine that we've talked about, $61 billion worth of authorization for the president to send military and other assistance to Ukraine. On top of that, $26 billion for Israel in light of the war in Gaza, but also in light of what happened last weekend when Iran launched drones and rockets towards Israel, and Israel had to defend itself significantly with the Iron Dome that we've talked about, but also aid to Taiwan. And this is an effort to counter China's intentions, military intentions toward Taiwan, but also other nations in the Indo-Pacific who are feeling the pressure from China to go their way, if you will, and trade more with them. And so the president will be speaking about that a little bit later on. But also included in this legislation, as we talked about yesterday, was the requirement of TikTok and its 170 million users in this country to endure some kind of sale process for its American subsidiary to prevent it from being shut down and within a year. Now, that's probably, and the president's going to sign the bill as one, so it's all included. But the TikTok sale may take a lot longer than a year, actually, because TikTok is expected to be to appeal this as much as it can in the court systems about being forced to sell off a subsidiary under First Amendment rights. So that's where we stand. And the president will be discussing that in a little bit here, John.
There's quite a bit of intelligence there that would indicate that TikTok's ownership by ByteDance could be a national security problem. Mm-hmm. Yes. But nonetheless, my question is, who's going to buy it, and what mm-hmm. are they going to do with it?
Yes, we talked about Steve Mnuchin, the former Treasury Secretary. Has put together supposedly a group. That's the one interested party I've heard about. But again, if you have 170 million people using your app in the United States, you are likely to find a few buyers perhaps for it, for this as a way to sell advertising to them and to, and influence them the way we want to in this country. Let's put it that way. I'm almost out of my league, really, discussing TikTok because I don't subscribe to it. I don't use the app. One of my daughters sends us videos every so often that she makes on TikTok. So I don't really know. It's hard for me to know why there is this national security interest. But the intelligence community is of one voice on TikTok, and that is that that its owner, ByteDance, is affiliated, if you will, or closely tied to the Chinese government to the point where they believe that TikTok is being used to spy on Americans, their habits, and try to influence them, perhaps politically, John. So that's the way the intelligence community views it. There are a lot of young people, especially, who don't view it that way, and TikTok is apparently going to fight this. And it's a company that obviously has the legal wherewithal to fight it as much as it can before it might have to sell.
Well, this isn't the first time we've looked at social media being an influencer. I think about that situation with Steve Bannon and the Analytica. I'm trying to remember what that's all about. But that was kind of a UK-based thing that kind of took over and many say swayed a lot of people over toward voting for President Trump.
Yeah. And there's also, obviously, big issues, major issues with Facebook and how it tries to police its pages. When you have that many users, as Facebook does also, tens of millions, a few hundred million Americans on Facebook, when you have that many users, it can be easily manipulated by people and people who want to just send out stuff that's not been vetted and try to influence us politically or try to influence us to buy something. That's why Facebook is worth so much. But that's American-owned, if you will. That's a company that isn't necessarily out to spy on us that much. he laughed. Not spy on us all that much, John.
Yeah.
The way maybe the Chinese Communist Party wants to. If I'm the Chinese, by the way, here's just a thought. If you were the Chinese Communist Party or the rulers in China and what have you, and you think you can influence the election, how are you going to influence the election? Which way will the presidential election, will you want to influence it? Do you want to influence it towards Donald Trump, somebody who engaged in a tariff war and blamed you for COVID and, called it the China virus? Or do you want to influence it toward Joe Biden, someone who has left those tariffs in place, who considers China now to be a greater threat than anybody, and wants to prevent China from keeping TikTok, things like that. How are you going to influence? I'm not sure which side you choose in that battle, at least as far as the presidential race is concerned, because neither Trump nor Biden is really a big friend of China at this point.
Bob, I wanted to get your perspective on the homeless situation that the Supreme Court argued yesterday. We have a serious homeless problem here in Kalispell and a lot of controversy on how we ought to handle it. Grants Pass, Oregon handled it one way and it wound up in front of the Supreme Court.
Yes. And advocates for the homeless gotten a ruling from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which tends to be more liberal, that the city cannot just simply toss out people from or living in public spaces with tent encampments and the like, especially when a city like Grants Pass apparently does not have its own shelters. Can Grants Pass kick those people out? And then, as has happened in a lot of suburban areas, giving them bus fare to the big city to go to the shelters in the big city. Does Grants Pass have the right to do that to get rid of homeless encampments when it does not provide alternatives for people? And apparently Grants Pass does not provide those alternatives, and you can educate me on what Kalispell might have. I know that this can be an issue even in smaller cities. There's no question about it. We do know that larger cities that are dealing with this and breaking down homeless encampments, including Washington, Chicago in particular, do have a lot of shelter spaces. But you're also dealing with some people who are without shelter, as they like to say, who don't want to go into shelters because they sometimes have their own issues. But this, the advocates for advocates for the city of Grants Pass, Oregon, have gone to the Supreme Court, and you have to wonder. The reading I get from the people who listen to the arguments and who did stories on this, which I didn't, of course, who did stories on this, is that the conservative majority in the court may very well rule in favor of Grants Pass, that this city has the right to prevent people from living, basically, in public spaces, in public parks, on sidewalks, and the like. It's a big issue, of course, again, for larger cities. San Francisco has had a huge problem with these encampments and, gets a lot of finger-pointing as far as conservative media is concerned about what's happened in San Francisco, and which has affected the the living there, the quality of life there in San Francisco. There is no question about it. But San Francisco has not just tossed people out. San Francisco does have a shelter system. So what happens when you don't want people sleeping in your public spaces and living in your public spaces and throwing their trash out near your public spaces if you don't provide them some kind of alternative place to go in that particular municipality? And that's what the court has to decide. And John, I will ask you how the situation is that you think in Kalispell.
Well, the situation here, we have a lot of homeless people. We seem to attract more homeless people than the other cities around us. And many think it's because we have some facilities to help them. We've got the Samaritan House, which really works to try to convert homeless people into people who have homes. We have the Warming Center, which is a really low barrier where, I mean, just anybody can go in there and get a night's sleep. It's only for just a meal and a night's sleep, and that's all they get. The Salvation Army works to provide meals for these folks. The question that keeps popping up is, if we didn't have these facilities and we put the word out that we have no way of helping them, would they go somewhere else and not bother us?
Yeah. And then perhaps the basic issue of all of this is even if you provide a place for the night, do the folks who are there get sent out in the morning? Warming centers, especially in Kalispell, I'm sure it's very, very important, needless to say. So, the basic question is, if you can't provide some kind of permanent shelter arrangement, here in my own city of Baltimore, the city has actually bought some hotels that lower-end motels, hotels, and is putting up homeless people inside of those hotels as a way to provide the permanent kind of space for people to maybe get services to help them out, to help them find jobs, to help them get education, that sort of thing. But that's a big city, and that's what big cities are doing in a lot of ways to try to find that permanence, that place that homeless people can eventually be settled in, but transition them eventually to some kind of permanent housing. And conservatives, and I always point this out, that even the public housing system that was established by Franklin Roosevelt during the Great Depression was designed as a temporary kind of thing, but in this country, especially in larger cities and in metropolitan suburban areas as well, it is a permanent thing. It is a permanent place for people to live, which was not necessarily the intention of... I saw a quote from Franklin Roosevelt once about it, that it was only designed for a temporary thing until people could find their own place to live. And this is... I'm talking about the public housing units, buildings themselves, not necessarily Section 8, but the big public housing units that you see in your major cities, and they keep getting rebuilt, and some people have lived there for generations.
Bob, if we can just take a couple of minutes here and examine the situation in Midtown Manhattan at the courthouse there. Donald Trump is due back in there again today?
No, they're off today.
Oh, okay.
This trial, for some reason, takes Wednesdays off, and I'm not sure why that is. But usually trials take Fridays off that I've ever covered. But this trial in Manhattan, the hush money trial for former President Donald Trump, is off on Wednesday. So tomorrow, once again, David Pecker, the former publisher of the National Enquirer, will be on the stand to finish up his testimony probably tomorrow to talk about how... And this is the picture he painted yesterday on the stand, is that he, Donald Trump, Michael Cohen, entered into an agreement that they would do their level best to try to help Donald Trump win the White House and to put down any potential harmful stories, especially from women, that might come up against Donald Trump. And this doesn't have to do with the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels directly, but it has to do with the prosecution, Alvin Bragg and his prosecutors, setting up a pattern. And that's what they're doing with David Pecker's testimony. And it was all perfectly okay testifying on the stand that not only did they quash a couple of stories, actually, they paid $150,000 to Karen McDougal to kill her story about having an alleged affair with Donald Trump. And they also paid a doorman in one of Trump's buildings who was about to try to claim, and this apparently turned out to be false, tried to claim that Donald Trump had fathered a child with one of his housekeepers. And not only that, killing those stories, catch and kill, as the expression is, not only killing those stories, but putting out stories regarding Donald Trump's rivals throughout the campaign. And Pecker even talked about how they just made up that story that Ted Cruz's father was somehow involved in the Kennedy assassination plot. And then there was the Hillary Clinton is dying from cancer story that was on the cover of the National Enquirer. So he's perfectly happy talking about this because he has immunity, as we did discuss. So he has immunity in this case.
Yeah. Bob, as always, we appreciate your great reporting, and thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
Absolutely, John. Talk to you tomorrow. Take care. Thank you.